Welcome back, SciSection listeners. I'm your journalist today, Amy Stewart. And today I have the second part of Dr. Joe Schwartz's interview, where we are going to dive into the dangers of scientific misinformation and how to approach people who are spreading it. As well, we're going to talk about making science a more accessible topic. If you haven't heard part one, be sure to find it available on global podcast platforms. All right, let's get right into it. This is a podcast mostly for undergraduate students, but we do have all different kinds of listeners, a lot of people who aren't overly involved in science. So I was wondering what kind of advice you would give to students to try and identify pseudoscience and try to identify the nonsense from the sense.
It's a very good question. And there isn't a simple answer because you really do have to immerse yourself in science and the scientific world to know where reliable information comes from. And as I said, you know, you have to be familiar with the scientific literature. So you always ask the question when you hear some claim, where did you get this information? Where does it come from? And when you're dealing with pseudoscience, very often, you know, they will start stuttering because they don't know exactly. They've heard it. They've seen it on TikTok, you know, they've seen it on some blogger's website or whatever. So what I try to do is to guide them in that way and say, well, you know, you think that that's really reliable. Who was saying this? What is their background? Is it in line with the scientific consensus? But it's very difficult to squash conspiracy theorists. They have always been with us and they always will be. Why? Because science doesn't have all of the answers, and we do not claim to have all of the answers. So whenever science leaves a void, the charlatans and the pseudoscientists rush in and they fill the void. They have all the answers, you know, usually wrong, but they have all the answers. And that is generally very seductive to people, because people crave answers. They want solutions to their problems, you know. It's part of human nature that when something happens to you, when something goes wrong, like an illness, the first thing you start to think is, what did I do? Where did this come from? You know, what did I eat? Or, you know, how was I affected that this happens? And very often, in science, we don't have a clear-cut answer for that. You know, COVID is a clear example. I mean, we still debate how this virus entered our life. You know, I mean, there certainly are theories with a lot of backing that it came from, you know, one of these wet markets in Wuhan. But there are some people who suggest that it escaped from a virology lab, or that, you know, even that it was purposefully disseminated, you know. Who do you believe? And this is, again, where you have to track people towards the published literature and see, you know, how reputable are the people who are saying this. So no, there isn't one set formula that will allow you to, you know, separate the sense from the nonsense. You have to put in a lot of work. You have to read, you know, all over the place and see what has backing, you know, where is there experimental evidence for it. But unfortunately, a lot of the pseudoscience nonsense can be made to sound very credible. These people, I, you know, begrudgingly have to give them credit sometimes. They're very good at what they do, you know, like when you take a look at the anti-vaccine conspirators, you know, they dig through the scientific literature and they're very good at cherry picking data. And, you know, they will pick out numbers and twist them to make it sound palatable, you know, like, and as you know, you can, with statistics, you can lead people astray very, very easily. And you can mine the data, torture the data until it reveals what you want it to reveal. So you can look at mortality statistics and you know, cherry pick them and show that there are more people dying from COVID who have been vaccinated than who have not, you know. But of course, it's a false argument, and it's one that is, you know, relatively easy to sweep away with proper scientific information. I mean, usually, you know, I tell people, look, there will always be people who die from COVID. And if we had 100% of the population vaccinated, then 100% of deaths would be from people who have been vaccinated, right? And that people usually understand how, you know, ridiculous that is. And that doesn't mean that there's a link between vaccination and mortality. So you also have to, when you're in this, you know, the business that I'm in, of trying to separate the sense from nonsense, you have to learn the analogies to use, the arguments to use, and what works and what doesn't. Admittedly, when you do live in this world and you see all of the nonsense and all of the ridiculous arguments, your first reaction is to try to hammer away at them and call them stupid and liars, and it doesn't work. That just alienates these conspiracy theorists even more, and then you get accused of being in the pockets of Big Pharma or whatever. So that's why, you know, my technique is along the lines of giving them the rope to hang themselves by, you know, using the appropriate questions about, well, you know, why do you think that that's true? Where did this come from? You know, did this research come from someone at Harvard or MIT or McGill or U of Ottawa? Or did it come from the food babe, you know, who has a blog with huge numbers of followers, you know, who believes that if you can't pronounce a chemical, you shouldn't be eating it, you know? So are you going to rely on someone like that who determines the level of toxicity of a substance by the number of syllables in its chemical name? Or are you going to believe someone who has been in the laboratory and has done the research and has done proper randomized controlled double-blind studies? So, you know, it's a complex business trying to undermine all the nonsense that is out there.
I imagine it must take great patience to do these things, ask these questions, and slowly lure them in so that they're, like you it said, it, hanging yes, themselves with their own rope.
It does take patience because some of the arguments are just so outlandish, you know, that the whole COVID vaccine business was designed, you know, by Bill Gates so that we can all be implanted with microchips so that someone, they never say who, someone can follow us, you know, around. And I mean, sometimes, you know, the arguments are just so absurd that there you don't even know what language to use. So you also have to know whom it is worthwhile to debate and where you may have a winnable argument and when not. For example, I mean, I used to at one time get all upset and even debate the creationists, you know, who claimed that the world was created, you know, according to the Bible, just a few thousand years ago, and that Adam and Eve were, you know, first people, and they believed the Bible to be literally true. Despite the fact, of course, that we have all kinds of evidence about the Earth being billions of years old, you know, from radiocarbon dating to artifacts of all kinds. But it is not worthwhile debating those people, because there you are debating science versus faith. It's not that it's not a level playing field. You're not even on the same playing field. And you're never going to convince someone whose beliefs are faith-based. You're never going to convince them with scientific arguments, because, you know, I mean, they will just argue, well, yes, God created the world as it is 5,000 years ago, including all of the artifacts that look like they are billions of years old. And then when you say, well, why would God want to do this? And then the usual answer is, well, we don't know what God's purposes. So this is where, you know, we have to say, okay, well, you can go ahead and you know, have your beliefs like that, and this is just not worth arguing about. Or another example would be the Flat Earth Society. Now, the fact that such a society exists in this day and age is bizarre, to say the least. No. And we're not talking, believe me, we're not talking about a handful of people. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people.
It's mind-blowing.
Who believe that the Earth is flat. They have conferences. They present scientific papers to try to prove this. What is the point of getting into an argument with these people? I mean, you're not going to convince them, and they're certainly not going to convince you that the Earth is flat. So, you know, you also have to learn to pick and choose the battles that are worth fighting, where you have a chance of putting people on the right track. And there is a chance for some people. You know, my experience has been that there's a segment of the population who is properly educated, who know how the world of science works. You don't have to worry about them. They, you know, they're not going to become believers in flat earth or start believing that the moon landing was faked. Okay, that's okay. Then you have the other end of the spectrum, of the other end of the bell curve, let's say, who have such strong beliefs about whatever nonsense it may be, that you're not ever going to convince them. Their minds are closed. These are the dedicated anti-vaxxers. Forget it. You're not going to convince them. But then you have a pretty large segment of the population in between who are understandably confused, because it is a confusing world. Information changes. You know, one day we're told, don't eat butter, contains saturated fat, eat margarine instead. Then we find out, well, margarine contains trans fat, so maybe, you know, that's not such a good thing either. But that is indeed the way that science works. Information evolves, and it's all part and process of the scientific method that you change things when new information becomes available. So yes, I mean, it certainly seemed like at the beginning of COVID that wearing of masks wasn't appropriate because we didn't think it was transmitted through the air, right? And then of course, as information accumulates, you change, you know? And this isn't because we were wrong. It's because you can only make decisions based on the information that you have at any given moment. And it's perfectly natural to change whatever you're saying about a scientific issue. That's the way that science works, you know. So this is also very important to impart to people, that it is, you should not be accusatory because some scientist said one thing and now is saying something else, because they've applied the knowledge that has been gained since. So there is that middle section of the population who is legitimately confused because they're being bombarded by, you know, one day this, next day that. And there, by giving them the proper science, as you know it at that given time, telling them how you know what you think you know and why you feel confident in telling them this at this given time, those people can be swayed one way or another. And that's what that's the segment of the population that we need to concentrate on. So you know what I've learned in this business, that you have to know when to stop banging your head into the wall because it's useless. So you have to attack the problems that have a possible solution.
Absolutely. Being very thoughtful with it, I think, will make a big difference. I mean, some of the extreme cases that you talked about, it seems like a lot of these people's beliefs or notions of science are like ingrained in them. They're a part of themselves. And it's often hard to debate with someone when like what they believe is intrinsic to them and like part of their identity. So I feel like you'll never get through to a person like that. But if you can make the science more accessible to that larger part of the bell curve, then I think
Well, that's why, you know, I keep coming back to that, that the important thing is to try to explain how science works, you know, and how knowledge accumulates, and that it's a series of small incremental steps taken by many people, you know, working essentially in conjunction in the world, that eventually leads to knowledge, applicable knowledge.
That's honestly all the time we have for today, but I think I could sit here and talk with you forever. You just have so many interesting perspectives and such great insight to this world. And I'm very, very interested in combating misinformation as well. So for any of our viewers out there who would like to learn more, like you said, you have a radio show.
We have a website, maybe that's the best way, which is mcgill.ca/OSS. And lots of interesting stuff there. We have a weekly newsletter for free that you can sign up on our website. And I've also got a lot of books. My latest book is called Quack Quack,
which I'm currently reading,
which talks about a lot of these kind of issues.
Yeah, I absolutely recommend that book. I'm not quite done it yet, but it's the perfect read. Everything's quite short, but you go through the process so well of just how you approach the person and how you approach the issue and debunking it. And it's quite humorous as well. So I'm really enjoying it. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Schwartz. It's been an honor to have you on the show.
Okay, thanks very much.
That's it for this week of SciSection. I'm your journalist, Amy Stewart, and make sure to check out our podcasts available on global platforms for our latest interviews.